Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros,
welcome back, everybody, to Boxing Scene's official radio show, Leave It in the Ring, where our slogan is, if it's not boxing, we don't care. Man, it's a hot, hot day. I don't know about everybody else, but over here in California, Northern California, it is blazing. I heard it's like 118 over there in the desert of Aguascalientes, where the Timothy Bradley and Carlos Aragud fight is going to be happening. Not looking too forward to going up there to get into some dry heat, man. But right now, you know, I'm in the office and it's just hot. I can't have a fan on and air conditioning is not working. That's what happens when you're a working man, a blue collar guy. You can't afford the air conditioning. So I'm using the old traditional fan in the face paper. I look like an old lady in church right now, fanning my face. Anyways, so I'll tell you this: we got a good show happening. We got Juan Manuel Marquez calling in. Actually, we're going to be calling him in a little bit, in about a good minute or so, and we're just waiting for our translator to call in so that she can do the translating for us, the lovely Z. I got my co-host Strike Card, who is back, who made it out of the grave. I guess his wife didn't bury him out there in the camping trip, you know, didn't dig him up, put him in a plastic bag and throw him in the ditch.
No. My relaxing time is all over. It's back to strictly business.
Strictly boxing, and always a pleasure to have my other co-host Gabriel Montoya, one of the top writers of Max Boxing, with me. Hey, Gabriel, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing good, man. You know, I'm sending texts off to one of our guests, and you know, just flying by the seat of my pants as usual. It's incredibly hot down here. I can't wait to get to the desert so I can just burst into flame.
You know, I got my other co-host, Ernesto Gavion, Everlast Representative, and BoxingScene.com, one of the top dogs from Boxing Scene. Ernesto texted me a little earlier telling me how hot it was going to be, and I told him, well, you know what? They better keep the beers icy cold. You know what? It has a little bit of ice, but not too much ice, Ernesto.
Oh, man, it was 118 out there.
Man, I don't know about that, you know. I'm all about right now, you know, eating right and working out. I'm trying to drop the pounds and stuff, but not like that. You know, not going out in 118 and just sitting out there and soaking it all out. That's a little bit too much for me.
It would be near impossible to lose weight, out there. It was horribly hot.
You know what's funny is that Red, our PR guy, he lives out there, and that guy's a fat bastard. How come he doesn't lose any weight? The guy looks the same every time out. Well, every time I go down, he looks the same.
I was born at Coachella, and I used to spend summers out there. And honestly, once you get out there, I say maybe 3-4 straight days of that weather, you really just get used to it and acclimated.
Yeah.
And from what I understand, I guess your blood thins just a little bit to where it flows a little better. And to me, you know, actually when I got out there, you know, it was hot and you felt it and it was really bad. But, you know, I got back here and it was like 100 and it felt fine.
I got a theory about Red. I think he hibernates like the bears out there and stuff. He just doesn't come outside. Guys,
he also gets incredibly dark, and he doesn't quite have that dark tan. That's
kind of
weird.
He looks like a chubbier version of what's his name? Saul Alvarez, El Canelo. You know, that's who Red he looks like. So I believe we got our interpreter Z, the lovely Z, who always interprets for us on Leaving the Ring. How you doing, Z?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing fantastic. How are you coping with the heat?
This week hasn't been that bad here in D.C. It was crazy about, like, 2 weeks ago when we had temperatures of, like, 104. But this week has been okay in the 80s, so not that bad.
Not that bad. Well, I'll tell you, it's pretty bad over here in Modesto. We got that real dirty type of heat where there's a bunch of dust. There's all kinds of fields surrounding us, walnuts, the apricots. You know, it's not that good. I'm not too happy about it, but hey, what are you going to do? You got to end up settling where you end up putting your luggage down at. Like I said, we got a great show. We got Marquez coming on first. Then we got Hank Lundy, who just fought against John Molina on Friday Night Fights. this past Friday. He'll be calling in. Then a little later when he's on, we're going to have John Molina call in, the victor, to talk a little bit about his victory over against a guy like to stick out his tongue like Air Jordan. Then after that, you got Juan Diz, the baby bull. At the same time, we're going to try to work on maybe getting Carlos on the show today, the guy that's going to be facing Timothy Bradley. Timothy Bradley deciding to flirt a little bit with the 147-pound division. But, you know, talking about things getting heated up, you got the countdown for decision on Top Rank's website for Floyd Mayweather. You know, they're waiting for him to sign the fight with Manny Pacquiao. The deadline for the fight is Friday, July 16th at midnight. It's almost like the Cinderella story, you know what I mean? If he doesn't come through, he's going to change back to the peasant, you know? So, I don't know, guys. I'm going to go with Ernesto really quick. And, Ernesto, while you're giving me your take about it, I'm going to call Juan Manuel and see if he's ready for us.
I'm sorry, I missed that. What were we talking about again?
Oh, no.
The countdown to Mayweather.
I'm looking at the clock right now. It's 1 day, 6 hours, 53 minutes. And 49 seconds. The clock is ticking.
I don't care anymore.
Until he doesn't sign the fight.
Ernie, I got a question. Am I alone in wondering if these negotiations have even happened?
I have my serious doubts that anything actually properly was presented to Mayweather at all. I really have my doubts. I think Bob sent Golden Boy or Schaefer or Heyman his final offer. And said, hey, this is it. And either Schaefer or Heyman or Golden Boy said, okay, we'll take it to Floyd and see what he says. But ha, 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 he ain't going to sign this. And that's Bob's way of saying, hey, you know, they agreed to take it to Mayweather. We agreed to these terms. It's up to Mayweather now. And it's a – I'll say this.
Here we go.
The first round of negotiations – went, I think, Floyd's way. This one is clearly at Bob's court. He's made this a spectacle. And I got to say, I got to give credit to Bob. He's made this hush-hush media negotiation very vocal.
Buzón de voz next tail.
Well, it's interesting.
Su llamada está siendo transferida y se cobrará al terminar los tonos siguientes.
Claro que sí.
Z, do you care to translate?
Yeah, I'm calling him back again. So hopefully we can get a hold of him.
The thing with Bob.
Go ahead.
The thing that gets me about what Bob did is that he hasn't revealed what the negotiations, you know, were at. You know, there's no he hasn't said if it's 50-50. I mean, he's intimated that. Like, we don't know the exact details. That's what kind of makes me wonder about it. It's like he hasn't really negotiated in the press. Other than he said, you know, this is deadline and we're going to move forward. And that kind of goes against what he was saying. But at the same time, it's only fair to him because, you know, they've got a date, November 13th. He's got to move on his venue. He's got a fighter that needs to get ready to fight. And so, I mean, it's only fair that they do move on because it does take time to promote a pay-per-view. But, you know, for me personally, I don't even care if I
should ever está siendo transferida y se cobrará al terminar los tonos siguientes.
I couldn't even hear what you were saying.
We hear it. Leave it in the ring.
Oh, there it is.
Hi.
Okay, it's an answering machine, so, I'll keep calling them until we answer this.
Okay.
And Ernesto, just let me know right now. Yeah, you know, a lot of people think that it's easy. They hook me up like, hey, what happened? You know, I thought we were going to get him on. Yeah, you know, he said he'd come on, and he's just waiting for him to get on. That's the only thing, you know. So give him another call right now. Hopefully we can get through. If
hold
not,
on one sec. Let me call his PR.
Okay. All right. Well,
I guess I'll...
Go ahead, brother.
Jump on in there, Justin. Everybody's seeing the behind-the-scenes look, and it's a boxing talk, not a business talk show. So go for it.
I was just going to say, as far as the whole negotiations storyline goes, I would have to agree with you that Mayweather probably hasn't been all that involved. It would seem that Top Rank and Golden Boy are more than happy to get this thing going. But as far as Mayweather seriously considering this fight for 1 minute, I highly doubt it. I think we're all about to find out what we already know.
Buzón de voz next day.
Su
llamada está siendo transferida.
I'm trying to get hold of his. I'm trying to get hold of his PR person.
Okay, no problem, man. We'll be on standby and stuff, and I kind of lean to what you guys are talking about. You know, I wouldn't doubt it that Floyd Mayweather doesn't really have any hands on, and really want to see what major fighter does have hands on negotiations. It's always up to the team. He just gets the last, say, hey, put your Hancock on the dotted line, and that could be a major possibility. You know, but I tell you what, he's no blind guy and he's no deaf guy. He's got to see everything that's happening on the internet. He's got to see people, you know, talking about it. He's got to hear about it. And he's definitely got to know. He's got to take notice that there are people waiting to find out whether or not he's ever going to fight. I mean, I remember when he was to face Oscar De La Hoya, the fight was labeled the World of Weights. Well, this fight should honestly be labeled the World of Weights. You know,
right?
We maybe the world's tired of waiting. How about that?
Yeah, that would be a better one. You know, a better.
Yeah, and like another year, if they don't have it, this will be called the world doesn't give a shit anymore.
Yeah.
You know, the thing of it is, you can almost gauge it. You remember how, last time they went at this, everybody was talking about it. The barbershop, you know, the guys in accounting, just guys, casual guys on the street that know me and that know I write about boxing. People that never asked me about the fights wanted to see this fight. Everybody wanted it. This time around, it seems like buzz is gone. Nobody really cares. The other two fights happened, Claudia and Mosley, and now we're stuck kind of waiting to see if this will happen. And I think everybody's got a real case of we won't get fooled again. Until we see them in the ring or they announce it in an official press conference, I don't think anybody's buying that this is going to happen. And maybe it will. I mean, remember, you know, Floyd did make everybody wait about 2 weeks before he signed to fight Shane. Everybody started to worry, oh my God, the fight's not going to happen. And then it did. And you've got LeBron James and his big announcement. You've got the ESPYs that just happened. Floyd just won an ESPY, Fighter of the Year. Maybe he's waiting for all that to blow over. Wait till the last second. All eyes are on him, and he makes his decision. I don't know. We'll see. Well, we're going to know tonight.
Well,
tomorrow night, rather.
Tomorrow night, we should definitely find out. He has till midnight. Like I said, he's got the old Cirilla thing going on where he has till midnight. And if not, well, I think that it's going to just be the possibility of Manny Pacquiao either stepping in with Miguel Cotto again or Antonio Margarito. You know, I know Mexico and I think even the Philippines have expressed having that fight there in those two countries. And I wouldn't be surprised if a major draw in either one of the countries because of the huge followings that both countries have. Even with Mexico being that people would probably believe it's going to be a pro Margarito, you know, fan base, but be surprised there's a lot of Manny Pacquiao fans in Mexico. So, you know, Let's Get It On Promotions has inked Otis Triple OG Griffin into a long-term promotional agreement. The once next great champion, reality star, and co-host of Fight Fan Nation is set to headline the August 28th in Fallon, Nevada. That should be pretty interesting. Congratulations to OG, Triple OG, who's out of Sacramento. Carl Froch and Arthur Abraham have finally agreed to announce that their super middleweight bout will be on October 2nd at the capital city state of Monaco. That should be, yeah, I mean, that's a good fight right there. That's a fight definitely I'm waiting for, and I think it's going to be explosive. I don't think we're going to get the Kessler fight. You know, the Froch and Kessler, they were having a jab match between each other. I definitely see there's going to be a little bit more. I'm not really sure who to lean towards against in this fight because both guys are power punchers. It's a fight that I'll have to kind of take a lean back just to see, just because the fact that Arthur Abraham has shown that he can be outboxed, but Carl Froch is not the fastest guy. He doesn't possess what Andre Dorrell possesses, the Matrix, in terms of speed and hand speed and footwork. You know, Carl Froch is more of that Frankenstein kind of thumping forward, but he showed boxing skills against Mikhail Kessler, which a lot of us, including myself, didn't think he could show. Didn't think that he could show maturity or composure stepping in with a veteran fighter like Mikhail Kessler. He did. he did, and he was able to take the, you know, able to jab for jab with Kessler, and it turned out to be a decent fight. I'll go with Strikeheart real quick. Brother, what's your thoughts about Arthur Abraham and Carl Froch, the Cobra?
I'm just glad that the negotiations have finally been settled as far as where the fight will take place and when, because I was a little bit nervous that Carl Froch was going to hold out and possibly, you know, do something real silly. I know he was contractually obligated to fight regardless, but he was scaring me a little bit there. So, first of all, I'm just glad fight's happening. But I think, you know, it's going to take some time to digest exactly how I feel about it, just because Carl Froch is so unconventional. To try and picture him in a fight with a lot of guys, it's just
Buzón de voz Nextel. Su llamada está siendo transferida y se cobrará al terminar los tonos siguientes.
No way.
How about ruin the train of thought there? But yeah.
Hold on.
Let's see.
All right. All right. So anyway, I probably will lean a little bit towards Arthur because. I think that technically speaking, he's a little bit better, and I know Carl Froch is a powerful guy, but he's not on par with Arthur Abraham. I think he's going to really need to work on a really good game plan in order to win. I think that the edge should go to Abraham, but I'm definitely not decided on it, that's for sure.
What's your thoughts about it, Gabriel?
Why Monaco? That's just really weird, man. Talk about so neutral, no fight fan could get there. You know, I mean, I guess, you know, maybe the Euro fans, this is a Euro fight, you know, we'll be able to travel over there, or maybe the site fee for the, you know, the casino was so good we couldn't pass it up. I just think it's really strange to throw this fight there. But that said, I mean, I think it's a great fight. You know, Abraham, you know, coming into the tournament, I based this take on the second Edison Miranda fight when Abraham finally went up past 160. If you look rejuvenated, he was able to start faster and really go after Edison Miranda. And I thought that he would show that all through the tournament. Instead, he's gone right back to his shell defense, waiting and waiting and waiting to knock you out late. It proved to almost backfire. It did backfire on him against Andre Darrell. But Carl Froch is a different animal. You know, he's going to come at him. He's going to be a little wider with the punches. Abraham's a straight puncher. You know, he's economical. But I think he'll be able to land on Carl Froch. And I don't know. You know, I haven't really quite made a pick here yet, just because I was so surprised that Abraham didn't really change at all while he was losing against Darrell. And maybe he just couldn't because of the speed and athleticism. But I think against Froch, I'm leaning towards Arthur Abraham. I think he rebounds well and really takes it to Carl Froch and maybe gets a late stoppage. But it's hard to say because Froch is just so awkward. So hard to really hit, you know, you can hit him flush maybe once, maybe twice, but it's going to take more than that. And I wonder about Arthur Abraham's ability to follow up once he gets him hurt. But we'll see. I think it's going to be an exciting fight.
Not to get too far off topic, I was just going to add, you know, we don't have to revisit the tragedy that was the end of the Darrell Abraham fight, but I actually thought, you know, Abraham was making some good moves right before the tragic last move of the fight. I thought that, you know, the end of that fight was very much up in the air right before the DQ happened. So I don't know. I thought he was doing exactly what he needed to win the fight by knockout against Darrell. I don't know how you feel about that, Gabe. Just maybe elaborate on that a little bit. Because you thought maybe his adjustments weren't good enough, but I thought, you know.
Well, I
maybe
mean, when you're depending on the other guy to tire out, you know, it just seemed like he was waiting for Darrell to tire out and waiting and waiting and kind of picking certain spots, but was getting turned all night, wasn't really able to get his punches off. And, yeah, I mean, the fight was actually turning, and if I had to bet money, I would have said he was probably going to drop Darrell again or stop him. But at the same time, you know, he was having so much trouble during the fight. And he really wasn't able to corner the guy. So that's just pure speculation. I mean, looking at the way the fight went, you know, Darrell was about to have one of the best nights of his life. And
Buzón de voz Nextel. Su llamada está siendo transferida.
Okay, we keep trying and stuff, but it doesn't seem like we're getting through. And another number that he's giving me, it's not going through at all. So we will keep trying to get Marquez on. He did promise he was going to be on today. It was confirmed through Golden Boy. So we just keep trying. Hopefully we can get him on, and then we can go from there. A little later, we are going to have Hank Lundy and John Molina. Then after that, we're going to have Juan the Baby Bull Diaz. So it would be nice to get Juan Manuel Marquez to talk a little bit about this rematch that he's having on pay-per-view on July 31st. But right now, at this moment, we are not having much luck. That's how it goes sometimes when you're doing a live show, especially on Leaving the Ring.
We've got plenty of fights to talk about.
Well, last Sunday, if you guys didn't tune in, we did have our prospect watch. We had a lot of prospects come through. It was a great, 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 great segment. You know what? I'm sorry. I got interrupted really quick. I'm going to have to go off really really fast. Go ahead, Ernesto, and pick it up from here.
Or not.
Well, yeah.
let's just start back, to Friday night last weekend. Two great matchups.
Hey, I'm back. What did I miss? I've been trying to get.
We're having technical difficulties trying to get Mr. Marquez on the air.
I gave Dave another number, but he says the numbers are too long, so
okay,
I'm trying to.
I'm back. My bad. I had locked the door, so I locked out my little ones outside. Jumping up and down. So they were jumping up and down trying to get my attention. I was wondering, God, what's that little head popping up and down by the window? And it was my little ones out there. They were like, Dad, you locked us out. Well, a little man and stuff, and I was trying to talk about keeping them out there in the heat, huh?
Oh, man.
Well,
did they lose any weight?
What? I didn't have enough time to look whether or not they did, I'm gonna try one more time. Let's try one more time on that number and see if
this
it works.
This is the last time for Juan Manuel, and then we got to start talking about some fights because this is
we
not.
We need some background music for this attempt here. This is.
Oh, don't trip. I can do some background music, you know. Everybody's in there saying maybe he's drinking his urine. Never know.
Could be. Doesn't want to lose any of that strength, I know. Tense.
Well, this is his cell phone number because it's his voice on the voicemail, so just about him answering the phone. Hello? Hello?
Buzón de voz Nextel. Su llamada está siendo transferida. Y se cobrará al terminar los tonos siguientes.
That woman is fired, as far as I'm concerned.
Hola, hablas al número de Juan Manuel Márquez. Déjame tu mensaje y enseguida me comunico contigo. Bye.
Hola, Juan Manuel Márquez. Mi nombre es David Duenas. Estoy hablando con Living in Ring Radio. I don't know what to tell you. I guess we'll just call you back. What is there really to say and stuff? Well, that is his number, but he's not answering. I don't know what's going on. Maybe he's in training camp. Don't really know.
Well,
everybody got
Ramiro,
to hear his voicemail, though, so
what Ramiro told me is that he kind of does – what he does is after training camp, he goes to a doctor
mm-hmm.
to, I guess, kind of, either get rubbed down or get his vitamin shot. And then from that point to home is when we're to reach him, and this is the time right now, so – so maybe he's still at the doctor's. I can't tell you right now, but Ramiro told me to keep calling and to keep trying, and we'll get to him. Let's see. Just keep trying. That's what he keeps saying.
Okay. Well, throughout the show, we'll just keep trying. Hopefully we can get a hold of him. If not, like I said, we do have Hank Lundy calling in, and we should be able to speak to him. I know for sure we'll have a great shot in talking to him. And then a little later, we're going to have John Molina. He'll be calling in.
He just texted me. He's going to be doing the interview from Disneyland. That's awesome.
All right. On the ride? On Space Mountain?
I hope so. I really hope so. That's great. He just sent me a text, a picture of him wearing the belt he won off of Lundy.
Oh.
Title, and new. So I let him know that, that Lundy's going to be on right before he is. So it should be interesting.
That is funny. That's too funny, man.
John's always a character, you know. He's always kind of – that's what was funny to me coming into the fight, you know, was he wasn't making the jokes that he normally does. Like in camp, I mean, we were kind of joking around a little bit, but he seemed dead serious. You know, he knew exactly what he was going to do, what he wanted to do, but what he had to do too. I mean, he was heading into enemy territory, into Lundy's hometown. And still, you know, it was like – it was one of those things, you know, I have to pick fights all the time in my mailbag and just on the show. And when I wasn't a writer, I always waited to the last second. I waited till the weigh-in. I waited till sometimes the fighter's walking in. But now, you know, I'm on a deadline, and you know, Monday morning on the show, I've got to make my picks for the week. And I've never been that comfortable doing them early. And it was funny just doing the show last week, and my gut was saying, you know, pick John. I went with my head because my gut is usually dumb as hell. And sure enough, his dad calls me and says, dude, you know, this is what happened at the weigh-in. These are the facts, and I went with my gut, and I guess my gut was not so dumb after all this time. It's kind of funny, but I thought it was just mental, you know. I mean, obviously he had to go through the physical stuff, but John was very mentally focused, and to me, Lundy was acting out of character talking so much. I don't recall him talking so much about before fighting an opponent before it. But sometimes when a guy does that, you have to ask the question, who are you trying to convince, me or you? You know,
right.
And it turns out Lundy may have been trying to convince himself. I mean, we're going to find out in a few minutes. We're supposed to have him on in just a few seconds here, I think. It's 5:30. He should be calling in.
Who, Lundy?
Isn't he coming in? Yeah, he's coming on.
Yeah, he's coming in on about another 5 minutes or so.
This should be fun.
This should be real fun.
Agreed.
Ernie, did you get a chance? Dave and I did a breakdown on the Prospect show of Friday Night Fights and of the Showbox shows. Did you get a chance to see either of those, and what was your take on them?
Who, me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw all of it. I saw all four fights. Well, all three fights, I guess. And then, actually, to be honest with you, I thought the best fight of the night was the Telefutura fight right after the Lara fight between Derek Wilson and Ricky Lopez. I think that was a pretty good high-pitched drama battle between, I guess you would call, third-tiered prospects. You know, I don't really even think Golden Boy considers them their prospects more so than the Luis Ramoses and the Frankie Gomez's, Ronnie Rios's of the world. But that was an entertaining scrap. Ricky Lopez survived two knockdowns in the first, some second-round jitters, and actually came back to do pretty respectable. I thought he swept at least the last three rounds, but those two knockdowns really just affected him to the point where you know, it cost him the fight. But, you know, that was pretty entertaining. Going back to the ESPN thing, I think it was exactly how I predicted it, and that sooner or later, Lundy would have to sit down, and when he sits down and relaxes and stops moving, what's going to happen when John touches him? And we saw, I mean, it was clear as day that you know, if anything, John Molina can crack flat out.
Call him right now.
Hank. I love that
John gave him my.
We are calling Hank Lundy right now because we had a call.
Hello.
Hello, can I speak to Hank?
Hello.
What's up, Hank? This is Dave.
Yes, here I go. Here I go. What's going on?
I'm doing good, man. Over
here, how you doing?
Good. I'm trying to cultivate heat over here, Hank. This is Dave with Leaving in the Ring. I got my co-host Ernesto Gabillon and Gabriel Montoya and Justin Streichhardt. So how you doing, brother? I know it didn't do too well on Friday night. You know, the fight was stopped on the 11th round. Let me hear your take a little bit about that fight.
Well, actually, I did good in... Well, in my mind, I did well because, first of all, the world seen what I did. I put on a boxing clinic, and it was a premature stoppage. I was good. I went down in the early round, but I came back to win the round, and then at that, the next round, I outboxed him.
Well, let me ask you this, you know, because you were doing fantastic. What happened? Do you think that maybe you allowed that cockiness get a little over too much where you lost a little bit of focus, and that's what happened? He ended up taking the rounds?
You know what? like I said, it was a premature stoppage. One thing about me, I'm going to go after whoever, and I'm going to keep on talking. Because these guys, they really can't beat me. And in the back of his mind, I know he'd be like, damn, I had to fight Hammer and Hank again. Because Hammer and Hank whooped my ass.
But wait a minute. You say these guys can't beat you, but yet someone did. You know,
I put it like this. He didn't beat the...
Go ahead.
Understand this. He didn't beat the champ.
I disagree with you 100%. I saw a guy who did very little to give the ref anything to go on, and that's why he did what he had to do. Now, if you're saying that it was premature, how come you didn't do anything? How come you didn't punch back? How come you didn't get off the ropes?
First of all, he threw. If you look at the punch stats, I was in complete control, and then that round he threw. What, like, I think a five-piece combination, three got in. If you look at the tape, I was not hurt. My hands were still up.
Repeatedly.
I have to disagree with you. And understand this.
Anytime you have a man, promoter slash trainer, come in your dressing room and tell you, and he specifically said, you beat my fighter's ass. The referee was not supposed to stop that fight. Hank, you are the champ. And this came out of his own manager mouth, Dan Goosen, manager slash trainer, Dan Goosen mouth. But like I said, I ain't got nothing to be ashamed about. My head is held up high. I'm going right back in the ring in August.
Now, are you hoping, Hank, that you're going to get a rematch with John Molina?
Even though his promoter said,
you know, you won, champ, did he, at the end of that sentence, did he say, you won, champ, I'm going to give you a rematch?
You know what I said? I said, well, I said, since you see it like that, what's up with the rematch? He said, he looked at me and said, no. He said, Hank, you're a hell of a fighter and you are dangerous. And that's why I go about doing what I do, because these guys are scared to fight me.
All right. Well,
now,
if I called Dan Goosen right now,
would he actually? This is Gabe Montoya. I'm with Matt.
Call him. Like I said, call him.
I'll call him in just a second. We actually have John Lita going to be coming on the line in about 10 minutes.
Call him too.
Let me ask you this. I was watching the tape, and this is what I saw. At the end of the fight, you're on the ropes. Your hands are up. John lands a few shots. Your body kind of sags. Your arms drop. And that's when the ref stopped. Your arm started to come back up, but there was that moment where you started to lose consciousness.
Right.
Did you start to feel something at all? But here's
like, the... Let's be serious. I give a man credit. He put me down once, and I got a heart of a champ, and I got back up. That's the only time he hurt me, and I'm being real. Like, I'm going to give credit to where credit's due. He put me down, I got up, and that was it.
But let me... I'm just putting it to you like this. This is what I saw. In that you're saying it's a quick stoppage, but let's be fair to you. You're a young fighter.
Let me ask you. You're a John Molina fan?
Hank, let me finish my question.
Get out of the sport.
Okay? I'm a fan of the sport. And I actually had picked you coming into the fight to win it, and then I changed my pick at the last second to the result that actually took place. I'm a fan of the sport. But my question is this.
Okay.
Don't you think it's fair to you to let you live on another day? Let's say he knocks you out cold. Now, you have to come. That's something
he knocked
to
me out cold?
No, I'm saying.
Are you serious?
Hank, are you listening? What I'm saying? What if they had let you get knocked out cold on the ropes? Do you think
I'm a man. I would have loved to die on my shield. Knock me out cold.
Fair enough.
I got a question for you, Hank. As much as you seem to be in it right now, And I'm a fan of the sport too. I was very impressed watching you fight. So I'm not coming at this as a John Molina guy here. But you seem to change as far as your demeanor after that knockdown in the eighth round. You seemed to be a lot more tentative, and you slowed down quite a bit. Is that me reading into things too much, or was that knockdown in the eighth round? Did that take a major effect on the rest of the fight for you?
Well, look. I put it like this. Hammer and Hank don't take no ducks, and I've been on canvas before, and I know what it takes to get up and win a fight. It may have been a little bit of you, but the key thing about me, I went in there and did what I had to do. I kept on fighting, okay? Like, I know you get hit with a good shot, you went down. I made a mistake, and I paid for it. Like, I give them all the credit in the world, but you're not going to sit up there and say he had me knocked out on the rope because it didn't happen.
What was the mistake that you feel like you made?
Okay, all right. I had my hands down, and he capitalized, and he countered off the shot, and he caught me with a hook.
Right.
And I praise you for that. And I praise you for that. I give him credit.
Now, in my opinion, and this is pretty much what you said, you just got a little bit too cocky and started showboating. You felt like you were in full control, and it got taken away from you at that moment. Is that how you feel about it? And as a follow-up to that, do you regret calling John Molina dumb?
You know what? I don't regret.
On the opportunity game.
I put it like this. Well, right there, he was smart right there for capitalizing on that opportunity, but I don't regret calling him dumb for anything. I'm going to stick to my word. He is a dumb fighter, but he beat me, and I'm going to give him credit.
Does that make you dumber, though? Because you lost to a dumb fighter?
Let me ask you a question. Would you get in the ring with me?
Would I get in the ring with you?
Damn well I would.
How much money are you offering, Andrew? How much money are you offering?
No, I'm messing with you, but I love it, though. It's all jokes. I love it, though.
Hank, let me ask you this, okay? Because, you know, you were doing the switch of hitting, okay? You were going south. You were going orthodox. You were doing a fantastic job, okay? Watching from, you know, from the first round all the way down to the first minute of.
Versus Martez Logan, who is 26-43-2. In Catano, Puerto Rico, we have on the Telepatura card, Carlos Velasquez, 12-1, takes on Eduardo Arcos, who's 15-1. Underneath that, main event will be Jonathan Vidal, who's 10-0, versus Felix Perez, who is 7-1. Saturday night at the Agua Caliente Casino in Rancho Mirage, California. On HBO, we have Timothy Bradley, who's 25-0, versus Louis Abreu, or Abreu, depending on how you pronounce it. Bradley is 25-0 versus Abreu, who's 29-0. This is a welterweight bout. And then in the co-feature is Alfredo Angulo versus Joaquin Alcine. Angulo is 18-1 to Alcine's 32-1. And then rounding that out, I have no idea why there's porn music playing underneath me, but I'll go with it. We have Antonio DeMarco, 23-2-1, versus Daniel Atta, 24-5-1. And then in Mexico, we have Fernando on Fox Sports. We have Fernando Montiel, 41-2-2, versus Rafael Concepcion, 14-4-1. And a stay busy fight for Hot Pants Montiel. At the Congress Center in Schwerin, Germany, Jürgen Brammer versus Alejandro Lacatos, 36-3 versus 31-5-2. And at the Tropicana Casino in Atlantic City, New Jersey, David the Tua Man Tua, 51-3-1 versus Monty Barrett, 34-9. And finally, at the OK Casino in Espanola, New Mexico, Johnny Tapia, 57-5-2 versus Frankie Archuleta, 26-7-1. And that is your TV schedule for this weekend, folks. Stay tuned. We'll be back with a little more of Leave It in the Rain. We're only 45 minutes in, so we can always be back.
Lundy. Should we bring him back on? All right, and thank you for that porn music break. We're back with Leave It in the Ring. We're still trying to get the rest of our guests on right now. But let me just break down some of these fights that are going on this weekend, the Zab Judah versus Jose Armando Santa Cruz. I had a chance to speak with Zab at length last night. There's also a story up right now by Steve Kim on maxboxing.com covering all of Zab's career and heading into this fight. Zab, the sense I got from listening to him talk and talking with him, you know.
Okay, I believe we got John Molina on the line. John, are you there, brother?
I'm here.
How you doing, man? I'm sorry about that. We're having some technical difficulties over here, brother. We're getting dropped for some reason on the air. I heard you're in Disneyland. I heard you're wearing the Mickey Mouse ears.
Yeah, man, I'm wearing the Mickey Mouse ears. I'm winning prizes over here at Disneyland, California. I'm having a good old time. Well, I'm having a blast, man. A week removed from a great fight, and I'm over here with my best friends having a good time.
Right on, brother. So we had Hank Lundy on, and he pretty much what he was saying was that Goosen Tudor told him that, you know what, you won, champ, and wouldn't want to give him a rematch because he pretty much beat you.
Yeah. First of all, Dan Goosen never went to the fight. Second of all, he might still be a little worried from the eighth round right hand because I don't ever remember Dan Goosen even being there all the way in Rhode Island because he was back in California.
Absolutely. Yeah. Hey, do you mind if we call him into the show really quick? Is that cool with you, John?
You know what? I don't want to be too confrontational over the air, to be honest with you, because I'm at Disneyland. I don't want to idle my tongue. There might be I got to keep it PG-13 as much as possible, and I got you guys on speakerphone right now.
Orale. Okay. No, I can respect that. I can respect that. And yeah. So let me ask you this. What got underneath your skills? His trash talking or the tongue being stuck out at him, at you?
You know, it was a combination of both. I think being a champion, you have to portray a sort of image, and I think he didn't portray that very, very well. You know, and for him sticking out his tongue and whatnot, to me, it was just more fuel for the fire because to me, it showed a man that was worried about his own insecurity, so he had to try to put up a front to try to scare me off, and it didn't work.
John, I got to be honest with you. I mean, you and I are pretty friendly. We know each other, and I go to your gym a lot to see you. But I got to be honest with you. Coming into the week, I picked against you. And then we're literally
doing
this show.
It's all right. It's pretty perfect, Gabriel. Don't worry about it.
I probably should have picked you after we got some work in the gym together. We did the show, and literally as I made my pick, and I said, you know, I just looked at, you know, Lundy was in his hometown. I looked at the speed factor, and I thought things might go his way. Your dad called me just as I made the pick, told me what happened at the weigh-in. I came back on the air, and I picked you by late knockout. Can you talk a little bit about what went down at the weigh-in?
Man, at the weigh-in, I don't know if it was set up the way they had me jumping through loops. And first of all, I get to the airport, I land in Rhode Island about 2 in the morning. You know, the next day is the weigh-in. I get to the weigh-ins, and now they're saying that Rhode Island's not accepting my medicals, that they wanted me to go take an MRI, CAT scan, the whole ball of wax. And I'm like, wow, I can't believe this. Mind you, I have yet to jump on the scale. So we're waiting around for about an hour or two, whatever. We're getting ready to throw the show out and say, you know, we're just going to catch the next plane back to California. If they want to fight, they'll come over to our turf and we'll fight. So, neither here nor there. So then I had, I said, you know what, we had to sit down. We all discussed it amongst the team, and we decided to go forth and go ahead, and we went ahead and took the test. And then we got on the scale. We made the weight. We did the stare down. And, you know, actually, to be honest with you, during the actual press conference before the fight, Hank Lundy wasn't being very disrespectful at all. He was just being typical self, you know, saying he's going to win the fight, but nothing derogatory towards me. So, I mean, he was being pretty cool, but they made us jump through loops and put up every roadblock possible, I believe, to make the fight as impossible as it could be.
Your dad talked about a moment. He said that Lundy was talking a bit, and then you guys shook hands, and that kind of got him quiet.
Yeah, you know, when we shook hands, I think he, for the first time, he felt the power that I had. I think he felt the strength of me, because his first comment towards me was, look at Molina's body. He looks like he wants milk and cookies. He looks like a baby, which I thought was pretty funny, because to be honest with you, I do like milk and cookies. But, you know, and then when I shook his hand to say good luck, I gave him a good shake, and I think at that moment he felt that I wasn't just this tall, really skinny kid that he thought was going into the fight.
Well, let me ask you a question, John. I'm assuming I'm on the air. We've had some technical difficulties, but are you satisfied with the outcome of the fight, or would you be as interested in a rematch as Hank Lundy appears to be?
Well, put it this way. I'm very satisfied. I got the W. I got the title. I went to hit. Okay, let me put the situation to you this way. I flew across the country to fight the champion in his backyard with his promotional company, and now that he lost the fight, he's crying that his promotional company is against him? Come on, man. Now we're looking for every excuse in the book. You got beat. Just like I was sick during the Onodio fight, I got beat. But it made me a better fighter for it. So, you know, go home, regroup, go back to the drawing board, and work and get go into the penalty box and make yourself work hard and become that much of a better fighter. He's a good fighter. I don't think they should be calling him Hammer and Hank, though. Because, to be honest with you, the guy couldn't punch a lick, but he could box great, beautifully. He's a technically sound fighter. I give all the credit in the world. He was champion for good reason. But you know what? He finally found the man that was going to stand up to the bully and take it to him. And just like in the eighth round, I mean, I hit him so hard, the guy thought he tripped. Did you guys not witness that?
John, this is Ernie.
I got up and he tripped himself. I mean, come on. And that I tripped him. You know, and then the second, and then when they stopped the fight, he was still wobbly on the ropes. You guys saw the fight, man. You guys saw what happened.
Right.
The tide was turned. He felt the power. He was withering away. He was not a 12-round fighter, and he proved it that night.
Yeah, well, we
John,
were telling
hey,
him the
Ernie.
Same thing.
Say that again.
Go ahead,
I'm sorry. I missed that.
Hey, this is Ernie. How's it going?
Good. How you doing, Ernie?
Not too bad. Oh, so I'm
and never and don't forget about those awesome Everlast gloves that helped me knock everybody out.
Shameless plug three. Hey, after the fight came up, did you kind of chuckle inside of you because of all the stuff that he had said about you being a dumb fighter and you not being able to fight smart like he can? I mean, did it get kind of like inside of you go, oh, who's the dumb fighter now?
Absolutely. I mean, come on, man. What better, sweeter victory than to win the championship against a guy that thought he was King Kong and talking crap, calling me a dumb fighter. But you know what? Mentally, I went into the fight very, very confident, knowing that this man has never faced anybody like me. You know, and I think I proved it that night. But, heck yes, every day I wake up in the morning, I say, this could have been a really horrible week, or it could have been the best week of my life. And so far, it's been the best week of my life. And I'm not the one eating crow for dinner every night of this week, you know. This guy set himself up for failure. He was talking a bunch of trash, saying he's the best fighter in the world, and that he could beat Manny Pacquiao and Mayweather with his eyes closed. I think he needs to go back to the drawing board and reevaluate his game plan, and maybe more focus on fighting than trying to out-talk everybody. Again, like I said in the beginning, it wasn't a debate contest. It was a fight, and my fist did the talking for me, and at the end of the night, I came out on top.
Hey, John, really quickly, you know, let's go back to the fight. I mean, you got the win, which you looked great after the eighth round. It looked like you were coming on. But have you had a chance to look at the first couple of rounds and realize that you were walking in, you didn't want to jab at all? It just seemed like you were walking in the punches. My assessment is that maybe you're too big for that division, where you may be draining yourself a little too much. That's why you're not as mobile. Could that be a good assessment, or am I wrong about that?
I think, no disrespect, but that's absolutely wrong. To be honest with you, every fighter going into a fight, I'm not sure if you've ever fought before, but every fighter going into a fight has a sort of sense of instinct while they're in the fight, knowing when to turn it on and when to turn it off. Now, I'm not saying it was my job to go in there and eat punches, but during the fight, in order to get myself comfortable, I knew when it was time to throw a jab, when it was time to allow him to get off. I felt that I was in good control of that throughout the whole time. You know, I think that I needed him to – you saw the guy who was tipping and popping. He was landing 2-3 shots, maybe 2 shots, and getting the hell out of Dodge. And I believe that if I let him get a false confidence, that allowed him to get a little more insecure and expose that glass jaw of his.
So, after the fight was over, though, were you at all surprised to find out that you were trailing on all the scorecards? Do you have any sense that you needed a knockout to win?
Absolutely. Come on, I have Joe Goosen in my corner that's been in the business 40 years and a Hall of Fame trainer himself. He told me going into the 11th round, John, you need to stop him right now in this 11th round. Don't go to the 12th. You need to stop him in the 11th. And I had every intention of stopping him in the 11th round, to be honest with you. And every time I was hitting him, he was making noises like, and I kid you not, you know, God's honest truth. He was making noises, every time I would touch him, making noises like it was really, really taking a lot out of him in the fight. And so when they stopped the fight, his eyes were literally rolled back in the back of his head. And they stopped the fight and was it.
So let me ask you this. You know, having Joe Goosen on your corner and he's telling you this, is it raising any concern in your part where you might have to maybe pick it up a little bit or maybe change a little bit in the game plan of the next time? Because you may not be that lucky on the next fight like you were on this one.
Well, I like to call it grit and hard work because I put a lot of work into this camp. There's no such thing as luck, man. We made it happen. We went out there, and I knew I was going there to fight, and my goal was to win, and I won. You know, so no disrespect, but I don't think it was luck. I think it was a matter of grit, heart, will, and determination that conquered all. So, no, you know, every fight's a different fight. Whenever I have my next fight, we're gonna go after that fight, you know, differently because it's going to be a different man. But I'm just satisfied with the victory. I'm satisfied going into his home court, his judges, his promotional company, and we came out on top. What more can you ask for?
Hey, John. That's Gabe again. I'm just curious, how great does it feel? You guys took a calculated risk. You and Joe were real clear with me that this was a risky move. You're going in his hometown with all the things you just said. How good does it feel to pull it out like that?
Oh, man, it makes it all worthwhile. Man, it's what I live for. This is what I do. It's a great feeling. I'm at the happiest place on earth doing the interview with you guys on one of the best internet talk radio shows. I love it. There's nothing else like, you know, this is the best week of my life so far. I'm a champion, and I'm riding the rides with Small World. I can't get enough of that ride. Come on. But to be honest, you know, he made it all that much more sweeter, man. And you guys know me. I never disrespect any opponent. And I could have very easily went out there and said, hey, Hank, who's a dumb fighter now? Who's this and who's that? But you know what? I think Hank Lundy's a great fighter. I really do. I think he could fight his ass off, excuse my language. But unfortunately, that night was my night, and I proved the grit, will, heart, and determination to come out victorious, and I did so.
Ernie, you got a question? Ernie, are you there?
I think we lost Ernie. Well, John, you're the happiest place on earth. You being there, I think it just got a little bit happier. You just enjoy this victory, man. Thank you for coming on Leave It in the Ring.
Hey, thank you, guys. And I hope you guys enjoyed the fight. Before you guys let me go, did you guys enjoy the fight?
Oh, man, I enjoyed it all
absolutely.
The way, brother.
I was at
dinner, and I was rushing everybody to hurry up because they didn't want to miss the fight. You know, because this was actually a fight that I was really looking forward to. And you know, Gabriel picked against you, but let me tell you, brother, I picked for you.
Next time we all go out to dinner, Gabriel's going to pick up the tab.
Yeah, definitely. We're going to leave him the tab and everything, you know.
And I'll tell you one more satisfying thing for me. The bookies paid out in Vegas this time.
That's for sure, brother. All right, man. Well, you have a good one. Enjoy your half day with Disneyland, brother. And, hey, if Mickey Mouse gets out of line, just go ahead and throw the old man right.
Hey, no, I'll just call Hank Lundy and have him argue for me.
All right, brother. You take it easy, man.
You guys have a good one, man. You guys are a great show, man.
Well, there you go. You know, at least one of them has gone right. We have Hank Lundy, and for some reason it was just off the air. It just went all bad. And now it seems like we're back on track. We had John talk about his feelings and his thoughts about his fight with Hank Lundy. You know, we still got maybe another 15 minutes before Juan the Baby Bodilla calls in, or should I even try to attempt to call back, let's say, Juan Manuel Marquez? I don't know.
I don't know. That seems
we maybe
to be
should
the,
be able
the
to
root
give
cause
Hank,
of all the problems, but
well,
we can give it one more shot.
I think we should try to give Hank his piece and finishing what he was saying, because I did have a question for him, you know, about the fight, and I don't want him to think we hung up with him because we didn't agree with him, you know, because that's not the case. Gabriel,
I was having the time of my life. I would love for Hank Lundy to come back on.
Absolutely.
Well, especially considering now that maybe he got a Goosen mixed up. Maybe it was Joe Goosen, the trainer that came in, and he thinks it was Dan Goosen. But, you know, Dan wasn't there, so that kind of throws a damper on that whole they told him he won the fight. I mean, I don't see – I know Dan. I you know, even if he was there, I just don't see him or Joe coming in and telling him, hey, you won the fight over my fighter, and no, we're not going to fight you. It doesn't make any sense to me. I know them way too well for that to even sound like something that they would say. I know they're very classy guys. They may have said he won a good fight, and maybe they were evasive or, you know, gave the old we'll see about a rematch. But for them to flat out throw their own fighter under the bus like that, just not happening. I just don't buy it.
Absolutely. And he's not answering. No Hank Lundy. We'll give him a shot in a little bit. Like I said, did want to let him speak his piece, even though I think that we got pretty much what I thought we were going to hear from Hank, you know, about his take about the fight. And I don't know if we were going to get any more, but I did have some questions and whether or not he decided to watch back the fight and see his mistakes of what he had done in the fight.
Right.
You know, I was interested.
It seems like both guys aren't exactly seeing the fight as it was. And granted, we're not in the ring, so we don't really know. You know, John saying he's making sounds. He knows better, you know, the condition of the guy that he's punching than I do. But I still see, a lot of rooms for improvement with John. You know, a snappier jab, cutting off the ring a little bit better, not just walking straight to your opponent, but you know, letting combinations go. There's still little things, you know, that he needs, or big things, depending on how you look at them. But, you know, like he said, he felt confident, like he was the bigger guy and that he'd be able to walk him down. And if that's the plan, well, the plan worked. So who am I to argue?
Absolutely.
Right. At the end of the day, taking nothing away from John Molina because he did what he had to do, but I do feel like Hank Lundy got overconfident and kind of allowed what happened to happen. And that's his own fault, but He seemed to be in control and got way too confident about it. I was looking forward though to asking Hank Lundy, you know, since he ripped up the Ring magazine ratings on ESPN, I was looking forward to asking him exactly what's wrong with the Ring rankings and exactly how fighters like Ali Funika and Michael Katsidis and Juan Manuel Marquez are protected fighters. I was looking forward to that part, but we didn't get to go there.
What's that?
I was just going to announce David Tua and Monte Barron weighed in today. Tua tipping the scale at 237.5 pounds, while Barrett weighed in at 225. The TNT Tropical is promoted by Star Boxing and is scheduled for 12 rounds. It will be on pay-per-view Saturday night. We are waiting for the Bait Bull to call in. Should be calling in about 6:15. Hear a little bit about what he's got to say about his up-and-coming fight with Juan Manuel Marquez, a guy that definitely, a lot of fight fans, including myself, are wondering why the take of the rematch when Marquez definitely had a pool of offers at the lightweight division to kind of pick through. For Michael Cassis, to, you know, just mentioned right now by Strikeheart Ali Fanica. Even you can even think of you can even throw in Humberto Soto into the mix. Robert Guerrero is going to have his take at Casa Mayor. I heard there was a possibility of the winner of the Casa and Guerrero fight getting a shot of the winner of the Marquez and Diaz. But Amir Khan has been talking up a little bit, saying that he wants the winner of the Juan Manuel Marquez fight to Juan Diaz fight. Whether or not he will get that fight, I don't know why he would want it when he definitely has a lot of people in his own division to play around with in the ring. You know,
right.
I tell you what, man. Mike Tyson, he said David Haye is not ready. Tyson has told Sky Sports, you know, off his promotional tour in Europe, that the WBA heavyweight champion Haye needs more experience. This coming from the former undisputed champion Tyson. Tyson saying, believe it or not, he has to beat the likes of Chris Oriola. He has to beat all these guys. He doesn't have to beat the Klitschko guy. He's got to beat the up-and-coming first. Which, you know, this is coming from a guy that's had that experience, the guy that beat the man to be the man, and the guy that cleaned out his division before being called the man. You know, he's saying David Haye, pretty much telling David Haye he's got to man up and do the right thing. You know, funny thing is Vitaly Klitschko, the older brother of Vladimir, he's following the footsteps of his younger brother, Vladimir, and making video vlogs. He's on YouTube right now stating that Nikolai Valu is afraid. He's figuring the success of his younger brother picking up a camera is going to help him probably get the fight with a big giant or whatever the case is. I don't know. Maybe he's having some problems getting anybody put in the ring with them, but he decided to pick up a camera and do the exact same thing his younger brother did against David A. Ernesto, what do you think, brother? Good thing, bad thing, or is this starting to be just a little played out?
A little played out. It's just, you know, I don't know. It's just, you know what? It's time to just shut up and fight, honestly. You know, all sides just, I see, you know, just listening to Stammer and Hank Lundy, you know, I got to be honest with you. There's more talking in the sport than there is actually fighting, you know. We hear, yeah. And you know what's so funny about all this? Amidst all the talking, amidst all the people, you know, saying that this, they want that, and then backing out. You know, the one person who's been pretty humble throughout, even though he has an upcoming fight, Zab Judah.
Oh,
he's been really, really quiet about everything. And you know, I know that Steve Kim of MaxBoxing.com wrote an article, and I asked him, you know, hey, how was that? And he said, you know what? He's really matured. He's still very confident in himself. He still, you know, believes that he could be the man, you know, but he knows that his career's fallen a little bit short of what he expected, and he's got time because he brought something up to Steve that I didn't realize. You realize he's younger than Floyd Mayweather,
yeah. Right?
Manny Pacquiao.
He's only
I think he's younger than Miguel Cotto. I mean, he's young. He's still a young fighter,
right?
You know, maybe towards the end of his what would now be his prime. You know, and so getting back to the original question, yeah, you know what, dude, everybody just shut up and fight. You know, let's just do it. If you want, you know, Vitaly, if you want to fight value up, make it happen. You know, do whatever. Just stop demanding 50% and automatic rematch clause, and if you don't like it, you got to do the do-si-do and fight my brother. You know, just make the damn fight. Show that you're the best.
You know, they changed their offer. They offered him 50-50 and no rematches, and, you know, Vladimir offered that. And, you know, they're talking, but it's more to kind of say, look, this guy's been calling us a bitch this whole time, saying he wants to...
Oh, we talking about David Haye? Well, he can stop, shut up, too. I mean,
yeah,
they can all just shut up.
They
all should just shut up.
Zab last night, you know, and speaking to your point about Zab growing up, and we talked for probably about an hour. I was on another show on Ropadope Radio, and they had him on, and that was the thing that stuck out to me, was that Zab wasn't talking the normal shit that he does. And it wasn't like, you know, he's just happy to be here or anything like that. It was just like, he even said it himself, I've used to do a lot of talking in the past. Now I just want to show you, you know, watch the fight, and I'll show you, you know, that I've still got something left, you know, that and I don't know if you guys have seen the pictures. He's in tremendous shape. He looks like he really has dedicated himself and stayed in the gym. He said, I did all my road work and everything was by the numbers, you know, and kind of admitted that he hadn't been doing that for a while in the past. And, you know, to me, boxing's always pretty good when Zab's in the mix and doing well. And you know, all these other guys won't fight each other. You know, Devin and Bradley are kind of waiting to let the fight brew and this and that. And, you know, now at 140 to 147, we got a guy that is willing to always fight anybody, you know. And he was also straight up. He said, you know, Floyd and Manny, these guys are making $40, $50 million a fight. I want a piece of that, you know. And I don't know. I wouldn't mind seeing Zab get in the mix, get a few good wins, get an even better win, and let's see what's up.
I wouldn't mind seeing Zab in the mix again as long as he is taking it as seriously as he appears to be, because for a while he was in the welterweight division and it was like you couldn't get rid of him no matter how many people beat him. So as long as he takes it seriously, I'm all for Zab Judah because he's got such an attractive personality. But, yeah, it's nice to see that maybe he finally grew up. it would be a very nice thing because he's so talented that he should be in a better place than he is.
Well, you're right. You know, he should be in a better place than he is, but, you know, it could be a little too late for him at this moment. You know, I mean, he is getting in with Jose Armando Santa Cruz, which Santa Cruz right now sounds great, you know, due to this heat. Santa Cruz over here by the bay has a nice, beautiful ocean. But... you know, it might be one of those things where a lot of people could look. I mean, Devon Alexander was on Leaving the Ring on her debut on Boxing Scene, and he said there's no money in fighting him. What's the point of fighting him? And I think a lot of fighters look at him as a high risk for low pay. Why fight Zab Judah? And I think a lot of fans, too, have kind of turned the cheek on Zab, where Zab, you know, this is not his first comeback. He's made a comeback, and then he makes that comeback and he does great, looks good against a C-class level fighter, but then he goes back into the closet. He disappears for some reason. So when do we take him serious? I mean, I think we don't take him serious until he's like maybe four or five fights deep, maybe, and maybe with a B-class contender or somebody worth mentioning. I mean, he made 141 on the scales for his ESPN Friday night fight, which shows some sign of determination of making, you know, the junior welterweight division, but it still leaves a bad taste of what he's done in the sport to a lot of fans. I don't know if a lot of fans are still going to be applauding or rooting or even keeping an eye on him to really honestly take him serious. You know what I mean? It's just one of those things. You know, when you cry wolf too many times, eventually nobody's going to listen.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like, look at what people were treating David Haye. And you know, Zab, you know, to be fair to the fans, is not one in a long time at the top level. And it's going to take, like I said, you know, the Santa Cruz win is a get-back fight. Should knock him out in like six rounds or so. And then step it up a little bit more. You know, the problem with Zab, and it's almost like Tyson. When Tyson came back, and they kind of, it really more towards like that last phase of his career, they kept throwing him in with these giant guys. Even though they were like ham and eggers on some level, they were putting him in with guys that were still physical bad matchups. And with Zab, I remember, you know, I was covering him. I first started covering him around when he was going to fight Shane, you know, and I covered him in the gym. And they lost that fight, and I was talking to his management company at the time, PEMG, who I think might now be defunct. And they were like, well, we lost the Shane fight, but we got a better fight. And I was like, oh, yeah, who you got? And they're like, oh, we have Josh Claudie. It's like the worst fight for Zab possible.
Right.
I told him, like, he's like, we're going to knock him out. And I said, you guys aren't going to knock him out with a baseball bat and a crowbar, you know?
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I mean, as much as I respect Zab's power and speed, that's not a guy you're going to knock out. And I just thought he was mismanaged there for a minute there. He was kind of jumping different promoters. He was with Brian Young for a little while, then PEMG, and now he's with Main Events again, who's a legitimate, you know, really good promoter. I mean, I'm not denigrating Brian Young, but PEMG seem to be kind of fly-by-night a little bit. And now I think Zab's got a shot to, if he's matched right, and I think, you know, Kathy Duva can do that, you can kind of, you know, fill him up a little bit and then see what you've got in, like, two fights.
Absolutely. You know, I tell you what, this Saturday is going to be a great fight. We were talking a little bit about it a little earlier. Timothy Bradley, He's going to be getting in with Carlos Abagur. Funny story is the media open workout, Timothy Bradley was in there doing his workout, and Carlos walked in. And when stepping into the media workout, Timothy Bradley yelled out, "You came a long way to get your ass kicked." And later, it looked like Abagur was going to head back to exchange into his workout clothes to later be found out by his own people and the media. They had vacant building. He decided not to do his workout there where Timothy Bradley was at. I thought that was hilarious, man. I don't know whether if it was Timothy Bradley getting to him because, you know, Carlos is obviously the bigger and the bigger puncher in this fight, or if he was just like, one, I don't think I'm going to engage with any verbal lashing of each other here in the media workout. I don't know. Gabriel, what do you think, brother?
I'm sorry. You hit me with that question again. I was answering a text from a fighter. My bad.
I said I don't know whether or not Carlos was just avoiding any kind of confrontation with Timothy Bradley, or he just decided, or maybe it got underneath his skin. He was just like, you know what, maybe got spooked.
I'm not really sure what happened. You know, I was scheduled to do a one-on-one with him, and I got a call that he had left the media workout. He was going to call me as soon as he got there, 2:00. Apparently, he showed up. Watched Bradley, who was finishing his workout shirtless. And, you know, we all know Bradley looks like Superman without his shirt on, especially right before a fight. There was kind of words exchanged, and Tim said to him, "You came a long way to get your ass kicked." Abagur sat there for a bit, looked around, and I guess muttered, "I'm not working out here," and took off. And they thought he was going to change, and it turned out he'd gotten in the car and had literally taken off. I don't know if he was, you know, he didn't want to be working out there, you know, in front of Bradley, didn't want to show him anything, or was intimidated by the moment, or maybe he was just too damn hot and he wanted to go back inside. I don't know. But, you know, it's like Molina and Lundy, man. This is a mental game as much as anything. And you're playing chess right up into that opening bell. And, man, you know, he just kind of checkmated himself a little bit, in my opinion.
You know, the funny thing is that Abagur is one of those guys where he's been dropped and comes back in kind of that, you know, Arturo Gatti fashion where he looks like he's hurt, which he is hurt, but he just tends to get a little stronger. This fight is in so many ways, it's interesting. I mean, you can flip-flop it, you know, up and down, and you may honestly, it's going to be one of those fights, it's going to be a toss of a coin. You know, whose luck is going to be a lot better? I know John Molina said it's not work, it's not luck, it's hard work and determination. But sometimes in boxing, there is a such thing as a lucky punch. You know, where Timothy Bradley has been down. Timothy Bradley has overcome being dropped. Where Carlos, the same thing. There's the two fighters that kind of mirror each other in terms of getting a little over too excited, overcommitted, and leaving themselves open to be countered. Where Carlos, you could kind of more or less has been rocked a little bit more in terms of having the legs of the queer street than Timothy Bradley. I like this fight a whole lot. I'm going to tell you why. Carlos is the bigger guy. You know, he's fought at 154. He's come down to 147. He looks, I was just reading the text. My bad. I wouldn't say that he is the more. I wouldn't say he's more comfortable at 147. Being dropped at 147 could tell you that maybe he may be draining his body a little too much. You know what I mean? He doesn't have steady legs. But Timothy Bradley's been dropped at 140. And if you've seen Timothy Bradley, which everybody, if you're a fan of Timothy, the guy has one of those chisel cut bodies where, you know, his body is his temple, you know. And a lot of times you see, you know, a lot of guys say, well, Timothy's not the tallest or biggest guy. It could be true. But it doesn't mean that he doesn't have a frame that cannot pack in those extra 7 pounds at 147. And I don't even think he's going to come in at 147. I think he's going to come in at maybe tipping his skills close to 146. And that may maybe help him a little bit more in terms of taking or packing the punch of a 147 to a 154 puncher. Just in terms of whether him getting dropped, I'm not really sure. But Carlos is a big hitter. So my question is he going to be able to withstand a punch by a guy that does commit, a guy that does open up and get a little wild? Is Timothy going to get out of his game plan if he's successful in the early rounds? Is he going to, you know, stay like that? I highly doubt it. I know that, you know, Joel Diaz has, you know, stressed it that that's Timothy's downfall. The shitty thing about this match is that if he loses to Carlos, he really honestly lost to a lesser fighter than Peterson, to Holt, or any of those fighters. You know,
he's not going to lose.
Well, you never know.
Yeah.
We never know. Come on, we've seen things happen in boxing where
right.
We can't say it's not going to happen. There's a possibility. There's a punch away that Carlos can do. And that guy, Carlos, to me, has shown resilience by getting up and throwing back, where Timothy could fail into going, ooh, I got him. And
right. Timothy's been his own worst enemy several times, and I think he needs to save having fun for after the fight, because sometimes he has a little bit too much fun. And a guy with the big punch, I mean, it may not be a pretty fight for him, but he could walk away with a knockout win over Timothy Bradley. I would not be the least bit surprised. If Timothy can keep himself disciplined throughout the whole fight, you know, and not have those 30-second lapses where he just lets technique go out the door, I think he could win it pretty easily on the scorecards. But I'm not – I mean, I am going to be tense throughout to see if Timothy lets it get away from him. I am definitely –
Really quick, I'm going to interrupt you because I believe we got our next guest, Juan the Baby Bull Diaz. Are you there, brother?
Yes, sir. I'm here on the line.
How you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty good. Just relaxing here, getting ready for another day at the office tomorrow.
Another day at the office to get ready at the big op happening July 31st. Now, the rematch. Now, obviously, Juan, the rematch for you is fantastic. It's a fight that last time we had you on the show, you said you stressed to us that I want to be able to correct the mistakes that that I did the first time I stepped in with Marquez. Now, in that terms of correcting mistakes, does that mean you went back and looked at film over and over and over repeatedly to hopefully correct on July 31st against Marquez?
Oh yeah, I've gone over through the fight. The first fight, and I've seen my mistakes, and that's exactly what I've been working on is especially not falling in, squaring up right in front of Marquez, because obviously we all know he's a very intelligent and smart fighter in the ring and a great counterpuncher, and I was right there to be hit. So with that being said, that's one of the weaknesses that I had in the fight, and that I've definitely been training extremely hard to correct.
No, Diaz, you know, I got three of my other co-hosts on with me, and I'm going to direct the other co-hosts because we've had some technical problems, so we can't communicate, you know, offline. So I'll direct who's going to be asking you a question next. But I got one more question for you. You know, obviously, this is more of a fight for you in terms of a crossroad. You know, Marquez was not successful against Floyd Mayweather, but in terms, I think a lot of fight fans feel this wasn't having a rematch with you, and it wasn't really much needed in his part, but it was much needed in your part. Now, that being said, does that make you feel a little bit more pressured in making sure your A game is up to par, because fight fans feel that you've seen your better days pass already?
No, not at all. And actually, I'm gonna correct you and all the fans. This fight wasn't needed for me to take. You know, I had three great fights last year. Obviously, it wasn't one of my successful years like in the past. But I could have, you know, I fought Marquez, I fought Malignaggi twice. But I could have done is go back and take a two or three tune-up fights and really get myself back together and really start the new year, meaning 2010, with a bang. You know, get a couple of tune-ups, a couple of knockout wins, and then come back and challenge for another world title. But I say, you know what, man, in this time and era, you have to take advantage of what's given to you. And the fight came up, and I took advantage of it. I'm 26 years old. And you're right about one thing. This fight right here is a crossroads fight for me. I'm smart enough to know that when a dream comes true, it comes true, and I'm not going to be chasing a dream that's never going to come true again. If I'm successful in the fight, then, you know, I'm going to be successful, I'm going to be a champion, I'm going to be the lightweight champion of the world, and if I'm not, then, well, I move on to bigger and better things. But as far as me being done, I seriously doubt that. I'm 26 years old. I feel better than ever. I go train every day. Whether I get sore or not, the next morning I'm up again. I'm fresh. I'm refreshed. I'm good as new. You know, because I'm 26 years old and I'm taking advantage of that right now.
Well, let me ask you this really quick, Juan, and then I'm going to pass it over to my co-host Ernesto Gabillon from Everlast and Leaving in the Ring. When you say, okay, I'm young, I could have took some tune-up fights. When I had you on Leaving the Ring, and we talked about the cut in your eye, and it looked like that was the major play of you losing that fight because you didn't see the punches from Marquez. And you said, I won't make that mistake again. But in terms of, okay, you're 26 years old, why not take the
Hello?
Hey,
Juan,
I can't hear him, Doc. Can you?
Juan, are you still out there?
I can't hear anything, though.
Oh, I think Dave dropped out. He needs to switch servers. I'll pick up his question. He was saying that this is Gabe Montoya with Max Boxing, by the way. We spoke on the conference call the other day. There was something that you and I had talked about. The fight turned after you got cut on the eye. And the uppercut started to land. I guess, you know, what he was trying to ask is, if something like that happens again, are you, you know, how will you handle it differently? It seemed like you, I don't know, I don't want to say panicked, but it seemed like you came undone just a little bit and were bothered by the blood. Is that something you can prepare for, or is it just case by case, man?
Well, it's really case by case, and I'm going to give an example of one of the cases was, for example, the Nate Campbell fight. You know, for Nate Campbell, I got cut, my eye was swollen shut, and I kind of went on the defensive mode. You know, when I got cut and then my eye started swollen shut, I started playing defense more than anything and got very, very distracted against Marquez. In that fight, I got cut, and I said, man, the hell with it. You know, I started throwing punches, and I got distracted again. But instead of being defensive-minded, I went offense. I went pure offense, and that's where he caught me. I couldn't see very well, and what happened is I just started throwing punches without even thinking about protecting or defense. But, you know, I learned from those two fights, and I have to find a middle. And if it does come again where I get cut, then I'm gonna find a middle, you know, where I don't stay there and just not do anything, but also I'm not gonna go in there and rush into and get caught with another with punches that I'm not supposed to or take unnecessary punishment.
I'm back on the line, Juan. I apologize. I don't know if you were able to hear the entire question I had for you.
Yeah, he just answered it, Dave.
Okay,
yeah.
Great. Okay, I'm going to pass it on to Ernesto Gabillon. Go ahead, brother, and ask your question to Juan the Baby Diaz.
Hey, Juan, how's it going?
I'm doing pretty good.
Good to hear. Moving up to 140, do you see that now as maybe a mistake, or is it something that maybe down the line you still think you can do? Because it seemed like you had trouble with a guy who's probably a normal 140-pound fighter, you know, in terms of the strength department, in terms of the speed and stuff. So is 135 considered you're going to end up being your home, or do you think you can make one more try?
No, I think 135 is going to end up being my home. I tried 140, but I'm definitely not a 140 guy. I'm not that big of a guy to make 140 pounds. You know, I think that my limit is 135, and fighting against Malignaggi proved that. That was a mistake. I fought the first fight I got the win, and I should have just left it at that. You know, I should have moved back down to lightweight. But, you know, being the stubborn fighter that I am, I didn't want to leave anything to controversy or any doubt. So I decided to fight again at 140. But I knew that I know now that that was a mistake, and lightweight is my weight class.
I'm curious, Juan. This is Gabe again. Just going back to the cut. I'm just curious. Can you tell immediately when you're cut? You're taking punches all through the fight. I mean, is that a different feeling than taking a flush shot or taking a punch in general?
Yeah. It strangely it is. It is. It very is. When you're in the ring and I mean, a lot of times you're in there taking punches and you might get confused, but most of the times, you know, your senses are right. When you get hit with a good punch and it cuts you, or you get a cut with the elbow punch or head, whatever, you feel a warm sensation running down your eyes or your face. And then, I mean, automatically, you know, like, man, dang it, I got cut, you know. And then, sure enough, like, yeah, I put my fist wherever I feel that warm sensation, and I look at it, and if it's blood, it's blood.
Is there an adrenaline rush that happens in that, or any sort of other reaction that goes on when that happens?
Well, it all depends, you know. Like, for example, in the fight against Marquez, I said the hell with it, and I got a little adrenaline burst, and I said, you know what, I got to fight harder, and that's one of the mistakes that I committed as well.
I'm going to throw it over to my co-host Ernest Gavillon from Boxing Scene.
Is there any there? Because if not, StrikeArts is just going to jump in. So, Juan, first, I got to thank you, man, because you don't know this, but you are the reason why I'm on this show. Because about a year ago, as just a caller, I threw a couple tough questions your way, and then I argued with the co-hosts and a few other callers about why I didn't like you. So, you know, you're not my favorite fighter, and you probably never will be, but it's probably the best thing for you, because basically this is my problem, and this is kind of what I was getting into you with a year ago when I was the caller. My criticism of you, and this is, like I said, the best thing for you, I'm sure, but I've always gotten the sense that you kind of, this is like a pit stop in your life, and you may not take the boxing game quite as seriously as I would like you to do. Could you comment on that? Because I didn't really get to go into that with you in depth, and I've been dying to talk to you about this for years. I mean, I'm the guy who was sitting there rooting for Julio Diaz to beat you, and since then. But I'd love to debate you a little bit here. So, do you take the game 100% serious?
I definitely do. I take the game 100% seriously, because if I didn't, you know, I made plenty of money to where I can go and do other things. You know, I can pursue my law degree, which is just waiting for me, especially right now with the name recognition that I have. I even had a law school make an offer to me, and I'm not gonna mention the law school because I don't want any conflict of interest to happen or whatnot with the law school, right? But you know, they offered me to attend their law school, and that basically they would waive the tuition fee, and I'm pretty sure it's because of the name recognition that I would bring to the law school. But I have that waiting for me, and, you know, I've invested my money correctly, so as I don't have to go and work at a five to eight job every day. You know, if I play my cards right, I I could pay for my college or for my law degree and then become and practice law. But I do take boxing seriously, and I put all of that aside because this is what I love.
Let me take you back though.
A few
years ago.
Right.
Let me answer it
the way Juan really wants to answer it. Are you serious, bro? Come on. Do I not take this sport serious? I got my eye cut. I got knocked out.
Uh-huh.
I'm coming back for another tough fight. What more do I need to prove?
I would love that's the conversation that I want to have. And I feel like I do speak for a large segment of the boxing public, and I feel like this would be a huge, a tremendous opportunity for you. So I'm going to put a little bit of heat on you, but I think it's a good thing for you, to be honest. So let me take you back a little bit, a few years back. There was a lot of guys who would say to you, I'm coming for you, I'm working hard, I'm doing all this. I'm going to paraphrase a lot so we could get to the gist of it real quick. And your response would always be, they have to work hard, but me, I can do this naturally, it's easy, and really what I'm doing is I'm going to go to school and all the things you just mentioned. And I've always gotten the feeling from you that this isn't something you take serious. And as a result, I mean, we can look at your record over the past couple of years and say, is that why? And my follow-up to that would be, how long do you plan on staying in boxing? And if so, are you going to take it to the next level?
Well, this is the way I see it, man. You know, when you wake up and you go to work, you know, you're always going on there. You're going to work, and you want to make sure that you do the right things. You don't piss anybody off. You know, you're in good with the boss, with the manager. Why? Because you got to worry about feeding your family. You have to worry about making that paycheck. You got to worry about getting that paycheck on Friday and going to cash it and pay the bills. Well, I don't have to worry about that. When I do my job, I do it because I love it. And when you do your job, you do it because you have to. You know, and the difference is that you go in there, you get mentally stressed. Every day you get up, you're thinking about whether, you know, is it going to be your last day at the job, you're going to get fired, you want to make sure you do the right thing so you won't get fired. Well, I don't. You know, I go in there, relax, and I think that's what helps me. You know, how many guys go in there and bust their ass and have more talent than I do and never become world champions? On the other hand, who people say that you know, I don't have a chiseled body like y'all. I heard y'all talking about Timothy Bradley. No way in hell would I ever get a body like that. But yet and still, I'm a three-time world champion. Yet and still, there's so many guys out there that have more talent than I do, that have chiseled bodies, which I don't have. But the only thing is that the difference is that I have the heart and the dedication, and I do work hard. That's what happens. A lot of these guys, when they go into work, they don't take it too seriously, or sometimes they go overboard doing it. They can't find a middle to it. And I, on the other hand, because I don't have to do this for my livelihood, I have fun with it. You know, I work hard, I train hard, I bust my butt, but I also have fun with it because I don't want to go through life doing something that I don't love, man. If this starts becoming a job, and if I ever start thinking about it like you want me to think about it, this is what I live and breathe and eat every day, then that's when I'm gonna say, you know what, I'm done, because that's when it's gonna become boring and it's gonna become a job to me, and that's why I don't live, eat, and breathe boxing, because then it's going to become boring to me. It's something that I like to do, and I love it.
Fair enough. So there's obviously two ways that you would decide you wanted to end your career. Either you would be unsuccessful for a certain amount of time, or you would, like you said, get bored with it. If you were to lose this fight with Marquez again in the same fashion you did the first time, would you seriously consider hanging up the gloves and starting your career as a lawyer?
Yeah, I definitely would, because I'm not gonna sit here and try to, like I said, try to chase a dream that's never gonna come true. You know, I might accept what comes to me. If I lose, I lose, and I'm gonna take it like a man. And if I win, I win, and I keep going and doing bigger and better things in boxing.
Okay, so on that other hand, what is it exactly you hope to accomplish before you do hang them up?
Well, before I do hang them up, and this is for myself, is I want to prove that I can beat the top lightweight in the world, that I can beat the man in the lightweight division. That's what I want to prove to myself. And this fight, that's why I'm fighting, and I decided to take this fight when it came up, because I want to prove it to myself that it's a personal challenge to me to beat Juan Manuel Marquez come July 31st.
Okay. And one parting question before I pass it back to Dave. You know, I think a lot of the people out there that more think the way I'm thinking, and I hope you feel like I respected you, because I certainly do respect you. I don't get in the ring, so I don't ever take it to a crazy level. But what do you say to the critics who say, you know, even though your first fight was an excellent fight and we all enjoyed it, that at this point in your career, with the string of fights that you've had recently, you don't exactly deserve to have this fight?
Well, what I would answer to them is, you know, who are they to say who fights on HBO, who fights with these with Juan Manuel Marquez? You know, this was not my choice. The fight came up to me, and me as a fighter, I decide whether I take the fight or not. So it wasn't up to me whether I take the fight. And if the people who are in the position to decide these things, if they decided that this was the fight that they wanted to put on July 31st, then so be it. I don't care what anybody thinks, whether I deserve it or not. You know, I'm the one that's going to be in there putting in the hard work and being successful come July 31st.
You got it. You said it. All right. Nice
talking to you. Juan, I really appreciate you taking the time to speak to us on Leaving the Ring. And, you know, I think, Juan, in a lot of ways, the questions that Justin were asking you were pretty much answered already, because, you know, how much of your heart still involved in the sport? Well, the proof is in the pudding. You're fighting Juan Manuel Marquez again, which you just mentioned a little while ago. I didn't have to. I could have went two tune-up fights and you know, extended my career. But instead, I'm taking up best and the biggest challenge out there for myself to show that I'm deep, deep in the knee in this game of boxing, right?
Yeah, that's definitely true. I plan on showing how much and how hard I've worked on July 31st. Everybody's gonna see the fire in me like I once had when I was undefeated. So, you know, I mean, you can't go 33-0 if you don't take this game seriously. You can't go 33-0. You can't go undisputed lightweight champion of the world if you don't take this seriously. So, for all the critics and the naysayers, you know, they can say whatever they want, but come July 31st, I'm gonna show them something different. I hope they bet their house and put their house up on Juan Manuel Marquez, because, you know, they're gonna go home, or they ain't gonna have a home to go home to.
You want me to be homeless? That's hardcore, man. I'm glad you finally shot back at me.
If you want to put your house, then so be it.
All right.
All right, Juan. Well, thank you very much, brother. And we wish you all the luck from leading the ring. You know, hopefully you'll get that and you keep continuing your career. You know, can't wait to speak to you again. And, hey, enjoy the hot weather that we're having right now. And just be safe in that ring, brother.
Appreciate it, man. Thank you. And y'all have a great and blessed night.
Likewise,
you too, man.
There you go. You know, I don't know, Strike. What is it with you with fighters that are goody tissues? You know, Juan the Baby Bull Diaz, and then you got Timothy Bradley, and you always have it out with them, man.
I made my peace with Timothy Bradley, but Juan Diaz, he's always just gotten under my skin. Like I was telling him, I'm glad I got the chance to elaborate what I had talked with him about a little bit last time. Just that. It just seems a little bit much like a pit stop, a game to him. There's so many fighters out there.
It's not a pit stop,
blood,
game.
Blood,
right? Come
sweat.
On.
No,
look,
come on.
Guy gets blood in the eye, gets knocked out. You got to give it to him. You got to, at one point, recognize game when it's in front of you. You know what I mean? I mean, it's how could you say his heart's not into a sport when the guy's
I just feel like every time he's ever had the opportunity to talk about something other than the sport, you know, post-fight, pre-fight, it's always what other than boxing can we talk about with Juan Diaz? That's just the sense I've always had about him.
Have you ever, in your field of expertise and what you do as a profession, do you go home and continue talking about it, like, you know, all the time? Or do you ever feel that need of saying, you know what, I need a break from it. I don't want to talk about, you know, what's going on in the office. You know, and that could be in somewhat ways what Juan the Baby Bull Diaz feels. You know, it's like, man, I do this 24/7. You know, I want to also show there's other avenues to my life, not just boxing. You know?
It just comes to another level when you're watching, like, the pre-fight coverage on HBO of Juan Diaz. And instead of watching him train for a fight or the highlights of his last fights, you see him doing his homework in a class or stuff like that. It just seems like that has always been the Juan Diaz story, not what he's done as a boxer, but what he's going to do when he isn't one. And that's more power to him for that. I'm just saying, as a fan of the sport, that's
a lack of understanding of how to market a fighter. Everybody,
I'm not saying it's not good marketing. Obviously, HBO has done very well.
Minutes. I'd like to actually speak on the show.
Sure. Go ahead and speak away, my friend.
Well, okay, then stop talking. This guy's been marketed. He's marketed by, you know, two different companies. This is his storyline. You know, Juan's not the flashiest fighter in the world. He's a volume puncher. He doesn't have a big punch. He doesn't have a lot of speed. He's not the most technically gifted guy in the world. He's a grinder. And so this is his storyline. I don't think that's a reflection on him in any way whatsoever. In fact, I think it should be celebrated that a guy's trying to expand his mind, try to become a better person outside the ring. I've never looked at it like a pit stop. I think that's kind of insulting to a guy that's trying to do two things that are incredibly hard at the same time.
That's the way a lot of people see it, but I feel like I'm the other side of that coin. So we'll just have to agree to disagree, really. I feel like he has never given the sport respect. And when his opponents have talked about
when
his opponents will talk about how much they give to the sport and how dedicated they are, he goes out of his way to say, you know, that he could do it without trying too hard and that this isn't what he's going to do with
how
the rest
about,
of
his how about, how about the old saying that actions speak louder than words, Strike?
Uh-huh.
I mean, the guy gets cut in the eye. He didn't do a naked gamble. He continued to go forward and take a punishment which led to him get
right. And my point, and I'm not going to belabor it, is just that maybe if he tried a little bit harder in the gym, he wouldn't have to take losses. That's it. That's all I'm trying to say.
One thing I've never heard about Juan Diaz is that he doesn't work hard in the gym. You know, and I know his trainer. I know people that work out in his gym. I've talked to many fighters that watch him work out. There's one thing I've never heard about him is that he doesn't work hard in the gym.
Okay. Well, I mean, I know you weren't a part of the show at the time we had him on last year,
but
we spent some time talking with him about, you know, the video games that he plays and stuff. It's just it's nothing against him personally. He seems like a great guy. I just wish he was a little bit more dedicated to the sport. It's really not more complicated than that.
I think he would have gotten further if he was just simply a better fighter. You know, maybe if he had more power, maybe, you know, if he was able to withstand the punches or had the kind of game that Nate Campbell brought to the table and was able to negate it or, you know, was able to fight through the cut and not panic, like he said, or, you know, not get unraveled by the blood and make bad choices. He'd have gotten further then. I don't think that's any reflection on his work ethic.
Okay. I'm simply going to disagree. I guess we'll just have to leave it at that.
Fair enough. Dave?
Is he gone again?
Wow. All right.
Is Ernest there?
No, Ernie's gone. So let's, I guess we'll just move forward in the fight weekend breakdown. Why don't we head over to the Showtime card? It's a hell of a card on Friday night. It's a triple header. Fernando Guerrero versus Ishii Smith. Underneath that in support is Leonard Lane versus Mike Dallas. And then finally, Sean Porter opening up the show versus Ray Robinson. What's your take on these, Justin?
Well, I know it's not Sugar Ray Robinson. It's the new Ray Robinson. I mean, it's not a too bad of a card. I'm definitely looking forward to this Friday and Saturday. So Sean Porter, Ray Robinson, I think Sean Porter has that one in the bag. As far as Ishii Smith and Fernando Guerrero goes, that one's a little bit tougher for me to call because I always felt like Ishii Smith was more talented, especially recently, than his record suggests. I mean, he's taken a couple tough losses, but he's always seemed like an intelligent fighter in the ring. So I know it's supposed to be Guerrero's night, but I wouldn't be surprised if Ishii Smith upset that a little bit. I know in Bolton, England, too, we got Matthew Hatton versus a very hard-to-pronounce Yuri Nuzinsko. And I'm definitely looking forward to that as well. But it's not going to be too difficult for Matthew Hatton to find a W there. I know it's for Hatton's welterweight title, the European belt. But Nuzinsko definitely represents the biggest challenge to Hatton since he took his draw to Love More and Do a while back. So it's a chance to see him take a little bit of a step up again. I know he's had a couple tune-ups since. I didn't really get to throw down with what were you going to say there?
I kind of look at Matthew Hatton as kind of like Ricky Hatton, 2-point hell no. I just don't enjoy watching him fight. I think he's just kind of a ham and egger and not going to get very far. Jumping back, though, you know, my take on that Showbox card. You know, Ishii Smith to me is a guy that, you know, he's always a contender, never a champion. He's just kind of floating out there. You know, every time he gets a big fight, he tends to come up very short. I think Guerrero is kind of green to be taking on a guy of this level of competition, this level of skill, rather. But I like his aggression. I believe that power is real. The speed is real. The athleticism is very real. I think he's going to stop Ishii Smith. I'm going to go bold with it. You know, maybe if Ishii goes completely defense midway through the fight and kind of gets in that mode where it's really hard to track him down because he won't engage, the fight can get extended. But I think Guerrero catches him. Leonard Lane, Mike Dallas, I'm going Leonard Lane on it. I think he's just a complete, more complete fighter. He's got a little more grit, a little more toughness. He's got a few, you know, three fewer fights than Mike Dallas. But Mike, to me, seems to be a guy that doesn't really have a lot of mid-range game. When he gets in close, he just kind of ties up. And I think on the inside lane, we'll take over a little bit. But he can also fight from the outside. Sean Porter, Ray Robinson, I'm going to lean towards Porter. I just think he's kind of like the frame of a guy that can carry more weight than welterweight, but the size of a guy that should be at 140. He's kind of like a tweener, almost Miguel Cotto in that sense. And I think he's going to have trouble if he tries to move up in weight, but he's also going to have trouble maintaining this weight. But at the same time, I don't think a lot of Ray Robinson. I think he moves way too much. He's not particularly strong at that weight. Don't think he's going to keep Porter off of him. I think it's going to be a late stoppage.
Yeah, he struggled with a guy with half the record, you know, and lost to him in his last fight, an 8-0 fighter. Now he's fighting a 15-0 fighter, so it's definitely not looking good for him.
Yeah, I think, you know, yeah, it's definitely. I've actually watched three or four fights now of Ray Robinson, and he's just, I don't know, just not really all that impressed, you know. But why don't we switch over to the Saturday card? This is a big card. We've already broken it down just a little bit. Tim Bradley, Louis Abregu, and Alfredo Angulo versus Joaquim Alcin. What's your thoughts on those?
Well, Timothy Bradley, I've talked about it a little bit earlier. I think he has it in the bag if he can keep his head in the game. I think he has it on scorecards all day long. The other fight is a bit more interesting, but I definitely don't see a huge problem for Alfredo Angulo walking away with a W. He's got a tough guy in there with him, but he fought Daniel Santos a couple years back and got knocked out, and now we're looking at a younger, fresher, more dangerous Alfredo Angulo. I just think that he's probably going to get knocked out relatively early.